Greetings, fellow investigators, and welcome back to our video podcast, Into the Darkness, where my friends and I play the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. I'm your host, Tom Rayleigh. Our scenario is entitled Bird's Head, and this is episode 5. It was written by Mick Swan, who is also our GM, and the recap will be given by me tonight. So sit back and imagine the tropical heat of the South Seas. The players are ready. Let's begin our journey into the darkness. Last week, we arrived in Manaquari, and we gathered together the villagers who were going to be our bearers, and we made our way to the town of Roti. We partook in a sort of welcoming ritual where we all drank kava, and we got quite inebriated, if you will. After that, we traveled farther into the jungle, where my character began surveying, and the others went and did their various professions. And that's pretty much where we were. Mick, did we arrive somewhere else?
Well, when we return to you now, you are on the way, on the final leg, to the village of Andai.
Andai.
Which is kind of the last settlement before you get to the mountains themselves. And it's...
So I assume we all are continuing to do what we do.
Yes. This is your last day's travel. So you're this evening you'll be spending the night in the village itself.
Okay.
I'm also showing that to ask some questions.
I'm also showing that it's Monday, August 26th. That's correct. 1924.
At this point now, it would be Wednesday, the 28th of August. You've had, because you spent a couple of days in the bush.
Okay.
Okay, well, I mean, it's another grueling day on the trail. It's hot, it's humid, your clothes stick to you. You can feel the sun on your back, burning the back of your neck. And no matter how much water you drink or how far you get into the shade, what little shade there is out in this part, you just can't seem to find relief from this appalling, oppressive heat. It just goes on and on and on. But eventually, at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you come over a rise, and there you see really rather a pleasant-looking village.
Finally, shelter from this humidity.
I'm going to try and show you.
Yeah, I know. It's hot out here.
But things seem to be thriving all around us. Plants and animals, bugs.
Oh, yeah, lots of bugs.
Yeah.
Too bad I'm not an entomologist. There'd be a wealth of insects to find here.
There you go. There's a picture of the village of Andai.
Mm-hmm.
Which is quite a large, settled village. There's a river runs next to it. And behind it, you can see the terrain. It's higher, but it's quite a nice arable lowland village. It's got quite extensive gardens, and they're quite happy people. The village itself is quite small. There's about 9 or 10 families live there. And Oh, you probably reached the village, I'd say about 5 o'clock. Five o'clock in the evening. And there's the one or two of the men, the bearers, are, if not from this village, at least related to people from this village. And Wepu speaks a bit of the language. You're sort of reaching the geographical extent of his language area. But there are other men in the tribe, other men in the train of bearers who speak various other languages, and he speaks. You know, they have a common tongue, and he can communicate with them. They can communicate with other people. You can communicate with them. You may be going through 3 or 4 levels of translation to talk to people, but you'll be able to communicate with people to some degree. Mm. The reaction to your presence isn't as friendly as your arrival in Roti. They're interested that strangers have arrived, and they're welcoming, but they're not bending over backwards, and they don't sort of regard your visit as a particular honour or as a particular burden. But they're being pleasant, and it's made quite clear that you're just here for the night, and they find somewhere to put you up. It looks like it might possibly be a storage shed most of the year, but at this time of year, the crops aren't ready to go in. So, it's...
What sort of crops do they grow?
There's a variety of fruits. There's a lot of sago. There's a lot of starchy tubers, kind of like sweet potatoes. Sort of. A few other things that you don't recognize. Which might be of interest to the biologist in the group.
I'm interested in that. Of course I am.
I have no idea what they are.
You can probably, I would say you probably have a word with someone. You could almost certainly get some seeds from the people in the village, and that sort of thing. In terms of your academic mission, that's fine. You're given very basic food to eat. It's not a great feast. They don't seem like a poor village, but they don't particularly seem like they want to make much of an effort. This is not a time of the year when they have an abundant store of food. There's a lot of food growing in the gardens, but there's very little ripe and ready.
And we've brought some with us that we can share with them, rice and some of that sort of stuff.
True, good plan.
Yeah, that certainly helps to ease the way. Now this is the. This is the last village you're going to be staying in the valley. So after this, you're heading up into the mountains.
Okay.
Well, hopefully it'll be cooler up there.
Do the maps that exist include in this far, or have I been surveying all of this up till here?
The maps that you've got, so the maps you've been given are very rough, and they show a river. And next to the river is just a cross and an S for settlement.
I see.
So it doesn't have the name of the village. Doesn't show any of the local geographical features. There's just the route of the river, the position of the mountains.
So based on the picture that you showed me, that you showed us a few moments ago, is there high ground, you know, within maybe an hour's walk where I can turn around and then look back into the valley and survey it? Without getting lost.
Probably, yes, I would say so. You can climb to the edge of the village territory, the cleared territory around the village, and it would give you a reasonable view back down the valley.
So I'm planning on getting
far away from the village, you'll be into heavy foliage.
I'm planning on getting up at the crack of dawn, before anybody else gets bothered, and I'll probably make my way over there and do some surveying before breakfast, if there's any such thing as breakfast.
Oh yeah, I mean they'll cook you some breakfast. Like I say, they're prepared to be hospitable, but not overwhelmingly hospitable. You get the idea that maybe they're doing the bare minimum because they don't particularly want anyone to stay for longer than a night because they haven't really got enough food.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Well, we don't want to put anybody out.
I don't want to cause a burden on them either. I mean, we're the strangers here.
There's a season for trading, and this isn't it. This is the wrong time of year for trade.
Okay. Yeah.
They've got nothing to trade, so there's a chance that they feel quite self-conscious that they haven't got anything to trade with you, and it's a little awkward.
Okay.
So, I mean, Pijo is going out and surveying. I'm probably, kind of studying the people in their daily life and kind of getting an idea of maybe how, if we do find possibly an undiscovered settlement or an undiscovered village, we might kind of have an idea of what's up with them, what to expect going in a little bit more further, especially this far out.
This village, being a sort of an open country village rather than a jungle village, this is it's very agriculturally orientated. You see one or two small groups of men preparing bows and arrows and putting together some rations to go out for a little hunting, but there's not the huge presence of hunting you get in a hunter-gatherer community. I mean, most of the men are going out to work on the fields, which in a hunter-gatherer community is usually the women's role.
Mm-hmm.
So how indicative this would be of life in the mountain communities, it's difficult to say.
Right.
Well, okay. As you said, it's 5:00, so.
Yeah, it's getting late, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, by the time you've had some food and been shown to your lodgings, it's starting to get dark. And, they're not putting on much entertainment for you, so. may as well just, unless anyone wants to do anything, skip to the morning.
I'm beat, so I'm going to turn in pretty early. I mean, we've been walking pretty much all day, nonstop.
Yeah.
Mick, is it possible for me to maybe speak with some of the villagers to get kind of an idea of some of their stories of what's beyond in Bird's Head? Because my mind is just drawn back to that story of the albino tribe.
Mm-hmm. And the Ropen, too. I mean, wasn't this where that guy took that picture of it, flying over the roofs?
So I'm curious as to what their belief system is, and what they believe is beyond the peninsula and what's within the peninsula, because you said that they're all kind of communicating with each other, so they kind of I'm not saying they have to, but they may have some sort of interlocking religious pantheon or something like that.
Well, Wefu is able to act as translator if you want to talk to someone in the village, yes.
Sure. and I'll add, I guess I'll ask the simple thing. Deeper within the bush, has there been any contact with tribes? Are there any, I wouldn't say shy tribes, but apprehensive tribes that we need to look out for that we haven't come across yet?
It's difficult for you to tell the minutiae of what the man's saying to you, because he's being translated through Wepu, and Wepu's then relaying it to you. Mm-hmm. But there are villages up on the mountain, and they keep to themselves, and they trade with each other, and sometimes at the end of the summer, some of them might come down here. We don't have much contact with them. They have a different custom to us. But we know a little of their stories and the things they tell us. What would you like to know?
I guess since one of our main focuses, the Ropin, I suppose anything related to the Ropin, if there's any link with, because in my head, any link with prehistoric animals, any link with dragons, anything like that. But there could be stories passed down orally, and maybe even through cultural osmosis, this tribe has stories that were relayed by another tribe, and another tribe, and another tribe.
Oh, he's the man that you're talking with is quite familiar with the Ropin. It's a big. They're flying. They live up in the high country. They're up in the mountains.
Up in the mountains with the other tribes.
Well, they stay away from the Ropin. They don't live in the same part as the Ropin, but if you go up in the mountains, they say you can see the Ropin flying around at night. You can see them, but they shine in the night like lights.
Do the other tribes? Do they avoid the Ropin out of a fear thing, or is there a respect thing? Is there some sort of like divine presence about the Ropins, or is it, do they understand it's an animal, they fear it?
Oh, they avoid it. It's a dangerous animal.
Okay.
It flies, but they're like the crocodiles. You avoid the crocodiles because they're dangerous in the river, and you avoid the Ropin because they're dangerous in the mountains.
So there's no cultural thing about the Ropin. It's just they're an animal. Stay away from them.
Oh well, my granddad told me a story, and he said that. The Ropin are the souls of bad people who've died. When bad men die, they come back as Ropin.
Oh, so they're associating the aggressiveness of the Ropin as, you know, resurrected spirits. So clearly, if they're saying that these are bad spirits, and they're associating them with horrible people that have passed, then the Ropin aren't things to be messed with. They're things to be avoided.
Another old man sitting next to the man you're talking to says something, and then Wepu says, that man says that they live in the caves in the mountains.
Which would explain why we don't see them.
There's a little flurry of argument between the two old men as one of them seems to be maintaining that they're flying lizards, and the other one says no, they're more like bats, flying squirrels.
Now there's also talk, and I tell Wapu this. I say there's also talk of a tribe deeper within the bush, an albino tribe that fears all outsiders, not just us, but everyone. I think I recall that they also live in the mountains. They live in the high country. Is that correct?
The man you've been talking to just sort of says, I'm not sure I've ever heard of that. And says something to the other old man, and the other old man nods and says, no, I remember that one. There's a story about that there's, I can't remember what they call them. I think they call them the singing people. They have birds, and they teach their birds to sing when they see other people, and they all run away and hide. But no one's ever met them or seen them. I remember when I was a little boy a long time ago, the old men in the village said sometimes they would see them then. I can't remember anyone seeing them for a long time, but we don't go up in the mountains anymore now.
But it is said that they live in the mountains.
They live on the other side of the mountains.
So, and I nod, and now it should be seen by, I guess, anyone who's kind of around me, that I'm starting to get a little wide-eyed and a little like, okay, well, we're about to discover not just possibly one thing, but we could possibly discover two things that'll put us on the map. You know, they can kind of see in the gleam in my eyes of, I guess, imperialistic, scholaristic opportunism. That's what I'll call it.
Well, I mean, the old man says, "Well, look, they're just a tribe there, but they're just like a white people tribe."
Does this do? Is it the legends say anything about how they look? Do they look like you but white, or do they look more like me?
I don't know. No one's ever properly done. No one ever. When I was a boy and the old man said they'd seen them, no one ever properly saw them because they always run away. What I know is they live on the other side of the mountains. I mean, we don't go in the mountains anymore, but my granddad said the side of the mountains there's sea.
Okay.
They live on that side. You can see the sea from that side of the mountain, and that's where they live.
I kind of mutter, "Well, then there we shall go." I stand up. I bow. I don't know this tribe, so I don't know if I need to kneel or if I need to bow or if I need to crouch down. I don't know their customs, so I'm just going to do the signatory bow. Thank them for their hospitality, and I'm going to turn in.
Okay. Does anyone else want to do anything before bedtime?
Nope. I'm just going to take the opportunity to make sure my socks are dry over the fire.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, your clothing is... Certainly, everything's damp.
Yeah, I figure with the humidity and sweat.
Yeah, I kind of wish we had some air freshener.
That'd be nice. I mean, maybe we'll find some tropical flowers to freshen the air a little.
Just going to take a bathtub full of tropical flowers to get that sweat smell off of us all.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know if you want to bathe in some of the flowers around here.
Take this metal axe and rub it all over your body.
What? Where did you get that axe?
It's an old island trick.
Right. Gotcha.
So, having performed your toilet and deodorized yourselves to the best of your abilities. is there anything else you wish to do this evening?
It's been a long, hot day. I just want to relax and go back to surveying early in the morning.
Yeah.
I figure before we leave tomorrow, we can maybe look over the village and see if we recognize anything, like maybe from the photos. Because my thought is maybe, I think this might have been the village where they photographed the supposed Ropin over flying over one of the buildings. So if that's the case, I want to try to find that building and see if that was actually the case.
There is nothing that I can tell you now that there's no building that looks like that. The building you saw was very much a sort of Western style structure. And actually, I can show you that picture again if you want.
I imagine in this heat and humidity, nothing lasts for very long.
Yeah.
No, it was some time ago that the picture in question was taken.
You'd build yourself a hotel out of wood, and then in 2 years it would be gone from the termites.
Or from the rot. I mean, imagine. Yeah. Humidity here probably grows quite a bit of mold. I can only imagine the mildew problem some of these buildings must have.
Well, that's why they probably sleep on the floor, right? They don't have furniture.
They use hammocks, but they're very rudimentary hammocks have three or four strands of cord. It's quite a knack to sleep in them. Now, if you look at this, you can see this is quite a big Western building with what might be a window. What it looked like, they might be proper roof tiles or slats of some sort. And there's certainly nothing like that in this village.
Okay, gotcha.
Uh-oh. What happened?
Hello?
He left.
Mick? Oh. Technical difficulties, everybody. We apologize.
Yes, we seem to be having a lot of them lately, and including the quality, we're trying to work on it, but don't know what we can do.
Is maybe it's in your area, Tom, or is it just your computer that's the problem?
If I knew the answer.
I blame Nyarlathotep. He did this.
Well, I'd like to kick his ass.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass. Let's see if we can't get him to join back up here in about 5 minutes here.
There he is.
There he is.
There he is.
That's exactly what happened to me the other night.
Absolutely no idea what happened there. I got chucked off Hangouts and it wouldn't let me log on for a minute.
Oh.
That's what happened to me the other night when I got chucked off too.
It's okay. I'll cut all this out.
Oh, so this is the part where we can talk about... No. Talk about the spoilers.
How's this all art? Is that a basketball team?
Yeah. You know, the spoilers versus the Nyarlathotaps.
The cephalopods.
Go pods.
Have we lost Thomas as well?
Am I gone? Thomas? Oh,
no, you're here. Thomas is here.
I've got a black screen down there.
I think
I've just got a tentacle.
Off. You can't see us?
Oh, it's just a tentacle. I think he's just got his camera turned off.
Oh, right, okay. Okay, so unless anyone else wants to do anything, we can skip straight ahead to the morning.
Nope, okay. I'm turning in. I'm tired.
Okay. It's not a bad night. I mean, it's actually quite cool up here.
Oh, that's good.
At night,
yeah,
it's not bad at all. It's your lodgings are very basic, and you can certainly from time to time in the middle of the night you can hear things moving about in the room with you. show are probably mice. You hope they're mice.
Please be mice. Please be mice.
I hope so.
But nothing untoward happens during the night. Everything.
I imagine that one of the things we've all had to get used to was the constant chirping and twittering of bugs and
buzzing.
Oh yeah, and frogs. Yeah. It's very noisy at night.
Noises like that.
Even here on the plane, it's quite noisy at night. And
well, as long as they don't have
your orientation, you're fully aware of the fact that it gets, once you hit the jungle, jungle is alive all the time, everywhere.
Yeah. As long as they don't have cicadas, I'm fine.
Don't like those?
A little nerve wracking, isn't it? No, all this noise.
The bugs from hell.
Okay, so early in the morning, Pijo, you get up and trek to the top of the rise.
And it's still nice and cool in the morning, so it's...
Yeah, it's quite nice, and there's a path that leads up towards the mountains, and that goes up to the edge of the ridge. Right. You imagine that's probably the path you're going to be following later in the morning.
Okay.
From there, you can get a reasonable view of the valley and the area you've just come from. There's further valley down to the south. It looks like it goes down for several miles. You can see. With the naked eye, you can see what might be one or two plumes of smoke in the distance that indicate that the presence of habitations or other villages or something.
Okay.
So, you know, it's quite a densely populated area by New Guinea standards.
So I do my surveying and, make my notes and draw my map.
You need some assistance with that, don't you? For holding the rod and such?
Oh, well, I'm not. It's not that formal at this point, but yeah, probably.
Okay. I'm happy to help out if you need.
I'm modifying the already existing crude drawings. Soon we're going to be in a territory where there's no maps at all, so.
Oh, yes. Once you head over that rise, the rise that you're sitting on now, and you're going to be heading into. Do we just lost Jeff as well now?
Wow. Well, I will. And we lost Thomas again.
I think so.
What in the hell? Well, we lost Jeff.
Gremlins, I tell ya, gremlins in the machines.
Like I said, I blame Yar. He's doing this.
Someone is trying to sabotage his expedition.
Yep.
But they're doing it in a meta way. How are you going to roleplay that then, eh? How are you going to do that?
I feel as if somebody is watching us.
By the time you've finished your survey and you get back to the village, the others are eating some breakfast. They've saved you some. Or the villagers. Pardon me. Oh, I do apologize. The villagers have saved you a little breakfast, which consists of just some grains and some fruit. And the bearers are already checking their packs and getting ready to start marching up into the higher ground. There seems to be a general air of dis-ease. Not disease, dis-ease.
Probably that.
Okay.
Among the locals at this point.
What's wrong?
Unease?
Unease would be a better word. So I'm really sleep deprived.
Is there something wrong? Are they nervous for us going out into the woods?
Yeah, everybody seems a little bit shaken.
Wepu has a chat with a couple of the locals, and he says, "Well, they didn't say much, but they're just saying that they sometimes," he said, "they sometimes deal with the people from the mountains, but they never go up in the mountains for some reason." And I asked them why they don't go up there, and they won't say. They just said they don't go in the mountains anymore. They haven't been in the mountains for years and years. No, I mean, I don't know why, but I mean, that could, you know, we should probably be careful, because usually when people don't go into an area, it means there's a hostile tribe in that area.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, we better watch our backs then.
Well, my men are good men. You know, they know their way about. They've never been up here, but I mean, they spend their lives in the jungle. They're all good hunters. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all good strong men. So we'll be all right, and we won't. I mean, if we see the markers of someone's territory, we can walk around that. I'll show you the markers if we see them.
Yeah, I was just about to say that, Wapu. What does the mark look like? Just so that we can avoid,
It depends on the people, but they'll put up a sign. It'll be in the path, so you have to walk around it to get into their territory. It's you can't miss it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm all packed up and ready to go.
Right, same.
Me as well.
Let's get to it, to our next camp.
I'll happily help take up the rear of the train of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a machete, so I can help kind of be up in the front, kind of whacking some of the vines out of the way.
I also have a machete too, so both. So I can kind
of... Right.
Well, I mean, at first it's reasonably easy going. You get up to the edge of the ridge where Pijo was this morning making a survey, and there's a track leading up into the mountains, but the further you go up the track, the more the track closes in, and it doesn't look particularly well worn. It doesn't look like anyone's been along this track for quite some time, and you know, months rather than years. But as you get further into the denser foliage, you find that whilst you can still kind of tell where the path was, the jungle has very much reclaimed it. So now you're having to hack with your machetes, and it gets quite... things go quite slowly. And everyone is taking turns. Because hacking through the jungle in this heat, back-breaking work.
God.
So it tends to be you go for about 10 minutes, and then the person behind you takes over for another 10 minutes, and you go to the back of the line, and you just keep repeating this. All the one. Of course, the bearers have got heavy boxes on their back; they can't hack because they're carrying the pack. So it's basically you. And it's Wepu, and between the seven of you, you're taking turns. But it's very, very slow going. I mean, once you hit that wall of foliage, you're making about half a mile an hour.
Yeah.
And it's just dense. There are vines. Sometimes you lose the path. You go the wrong way. Then you have to cut back in the other way. Inevitably, every now and then, everyone has to rest because it just gets so tiring and sweaty and unpleasant.
Is the forest, how tall are the trees? Is this like 100 feet over our head, or is it just, are we got blazing sun beating down on us?
Where you are at the moment, it's about 5 or 6 feet. But at certain places where when you're going steeply uphill and hacking, you can see that in the distance, probably no more than a mile ahead of you, you can see that it starts becoming very, very dense and more sort of traditional rainforest jungle style terrain.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kind of terrain, what you can see ahead is the kind of terrain that reminds you of what you imagined New Guinea would be like.
Yeah.
It's a little claustrophobic almost, a little frightening.
It's nature in all her glory.
It is that, you're right.
I kind of like doing this kind of forest kind of thing.
As long as we don't encounter any rats of unusual size.
It gets easier up there, says Whiffle. When you get in the big trees.
I hope so. Bird over there, like I never heard that call before. It was like
sound like a cuckoo.
Huh.
Cuckoo.
Kind of like a cuckoo, yeah, a little bit.
As long as they ain't a roping.
I don't think anything could fly through these, especially if it's as big as a roping.
So you guys noticed when we were up on the ridge that I could sort of see some smoke way out here. There's probably some villages up ahead, but
possibly uncontacted.
Have to be really awful.
Oh, there's about there's loads of villages, lots of villages in the south. Says Weckle. This is just the first of the villages. There's villages all the way down the valley.
Hmm.
Lots of people living down there.
How do they cut through all this jungle and foliage?
Well, they live in the valley, and they clear for their gardens. They burn to make their gardens, but they don't go far into the jungle. They don't go up on the mountain. Don't know why. I didn't know that. I always thought they hunted on the mountain, but last night they were saying they don't go there.
And they didn't explain why they didn't go there.
No. I don't think they know. They just said that, you know, they don't go there anymore.
Mm. Well, if we're going to do any proper surveying, we're going to need to go there.
Mm-hmm. Right. But once we get up on that mountain, you'll be able to survey quite a bit.
Exactly.
How long do you think it'll take to get there, PJ?
I'm not the expert on chopping trees and getting through the jungle, but it seems like we're going to cover maybe 3 miles in the next 5 weeks.
It's impossible to tell.
How
long it will take. Because, I mean, it's unmapped territory, so you don't really know where you're going at this point.
We'll just have to.
We are quite literally in the middle of nowhere.
There is a path, and the path just goes up at the moment, and you can certainly see that there are several peaks above you, one of which is particularly large, which must be Bonnie Rao.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to pay attention to the attitude of the men, the Wepu and his men?
That's a good idea.
In other words, are they approaching, like, is there any care to be quiet, or is it just we're out in the woods and, you know what I mean?
I'd say the two things you notice most about the bearers is that, first of all, they don't stop and drink anywhere near as much as you are. I mean, you're just every now and then you just take out your flasks and have a drink because you need it. Bearers, every now and then they'll take a bit of water, or they'll just wash their mouths out with a bit of water.
They're more used to it.
Not consuming anywhere near as much water as you. The other thing is that even though you're walking up a steep path through the jungle, up into the mountains, and it's oppressively hot, and they're carrying packs and boxes and expedition supplies on their backs, they're all smoking pretty much constantly. They're literally like they lit their first roll-ups from the fire at breakfast, and you can see that as they go up, they're just passing each other their cigarettes and using that to light other cigarettes. None of them have got any matches. There's just always someone is smoking, and they're just keeping it going.
It's the New Zealand smoke train.
And there's almost a fug accompanying the bearers as they go up. And you're getting quite used to the smell of the twist tobacco as well.
Works well as an insect fogger.
Well, it does. Yes, it certainly keeps the small insects off. Although you are aware that you're occasionally being bitten by things now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of things buzzing around your head, which is quite off-putting.
Well, we don't want to catch anything. We should be putting on something to protect ourselves.
Right.
It's just so damn hot and sweaty.
It would all run off before it would even soak in.
Okay, so we'll skip ahead to about mid-morning. You're still hacking away through the jungle. I'd like you all to make a constitution roll, please.
Sorry, what?
A constitution roll.
Yeah, 38. Okay. Okay.
30 out of 45. I'm okay.
Yep, I'm okay.
I make mine.
I failed by 10.
Okay.
I passed.
Uh-oh. Did we lose Mike again?
Oh, nothing. Hello? Yeah.
No.
Nothing. There's nothing to worry about just yet. This is
I don't like that.
That's never a good thing.
These are cumulative constitution rules. All right, about midday or approaching midday, it just gets too hot to cut anymore. There's no other option but to hack your way into some cover, and everyone just sits on opposite sides of the path under overhanging foliage, and you tuck into some light rations, drink some more water, and smoke them if you've got them. And believe me, the bearers have got them, and the bearers do just sit there smoking for an hour. Then some cloud cover comes over.
You take advantage
of the cloud cover to start hacking on again. And this goes on for the rest of the day until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, when you finally manage to hack to the edge of this lower foliage, and you get into the larger tree area that you saw before, At which point the foliage that you're hacking, you're still having to hack through foliage, but because of the cover of the canopy, a lot less foliage. And it's only a couple of feet high and it's easy. You can really, you can just hack through it quite easily with the machete. Although you are somewhat put off by the fact that you can hear things moving in the foliage while you're hacking through it.
That's not good.
Oh, God, so they sound big.
There seem to be sort of birds and insects. And
well, at this time, we need to find a place to make camp so that I can at least get some surveying done. This is awful.
I am exhausted.
Yeah, this is, like, it's exhausting.
I think one of these days, somebody's going to figure out a way we could just fly over this with a camera and take pictures.
Sounds like a pipe dream, but I hope so.
Way easier.
Until that day, I'll be in my hammock as I set up my hammock.
I feel like we're in that. Same. I feel like we're in that story with what's his name, Tarzan.
Oh, yeah, that story. I'm sorry. I'm exhausted, Pijo.
Well, let's rest.
Bearers get to work setting up the camp. And well, you set camp for the evening. This is your first real experience of being in the jungle, the proper jungle. And even though you've been told what to expect in your orientation, you're completely unprepared for what it's really like. It is deafening. Mm-hmm. There is just constant noise, chittering and calls and things moving in the trees. You can, underneath your hammocks, you can hear things moving very noisily.
Oh god.
Through the I've forgotten the word.
Leaf litter.
Leaf litter. Yes, that's it. There are things hooting, and if you're sitting by the fire, or if you light a match to light a cigarette or a pipe or something, the moment you light the match, something starts heading towards you, some insect or something, head towards the light. You can feel things that just bumping into you, little insects and things crashing into you every time you go outside your tent. It is full of life. The jungle is alive. The jungle is life. So it's not the easiest night's sleep. And when morning light comes, I mean, you've rested, but you don't feel particularly refreshed. You feel damp and sweaty. You spent the whole night tossing and turning. It's noisy and irritating. And you are more than happy to see the sight of coffee in the morning. And you really need it too.
It's kind of vaguely motion trying to get the coffee and pour it.
Coffee is just so one shit. Bug just landed in my coffee.
Oh yeah, that happens a lot as well. Yes. They're getting your food as well from time to time. Crunchy bits.
Is it 5 weeks yet?
What's that? Is it a cashew? Or is it an insect? It's difficult to tell.
Free protein, I guess.
Yeah, just pretend it's nuts. That's the best way.
All right. Well, got to get a little bit done this morning, so I do what I can.
Well, there's very little you can do. There's not much in the way of visibility from where you are now. Pretty much the only option you've got is to push on to higher ground and hope that it opens out a bit. and gives you a better view of the terrain. You make better progress than you did before. And every few hours, every couple of hours, you have a rest because it is oppressively hot. And you notice Wepu has taken to sending off one or two of the men ahead. So I just want to make sure this.
Just a quick question there, Mick. Does Wepu seem exhausted too, or does he seem like the bearers?
He's obviously. I mean, as with the bearers, they're certainly feeling it. They're not immune to the to the climate, but he seems to be doing. He's doing better than you are. He's certainly acclimatized to it in a way that you aren't.
Okay.
He's used to it.
I just thought I would make sure.
Onward.
No, I didn't get that. You went robotic and broke up.
No. We're ready to go onward.
Yeah, onward.
Okay. Well, you did the same thing repeats itself. You move on for a couple of hours. You stop for a little while for a rest. Move on for a couple of hours. About 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're stopping for a rest. It's about the fourth rest break of the day. And as with the other rest breaks, Wepu has sent off a couple of the men ahead of you to see if they can find anything. And this time they've come back quite hurriedly, and they run up to him and they've said something to him and gestured up ahead. And he's sort of made a cursory look. You can't see anything from where you are, but he's looked back at you. He said, "I'll be back in a moment." And he rushes off with the other two men.
What happened? What they find?
About 5 or 6 minutes later, they come back, and he says, they say there's a village up there. We can see a village.
Oh. Well. Do we know if the village is hostile, or?
The men all, they don't shake their heads, because they don't shake their heads. It's not something they do in their culture. They signal a lack of knowledge.
Mm.
They don't know. But he suggests that you should move further up and have a look for yourself.
If
you come, there's a little the land drops down a little bit into a hollow.
Mm-hmm.
And in that hollow there is a small village.
Huh.
Can't see any smoke or anything like that. You can just see a few buildings sort of clustered around a central area.
Huh. Well, if we're gonna be going up to that, we might want to be careful not to scare the people there.
Well, now you had said that some of these people were afraid of white folk. Maybe a couple of the natives should go ahead first and tell them that we're coming.
The natives should approach first, and then we should approach, and we should offer gifts if they haven't had contact with white people yet.
And
that's
our
a good
weapons
plan.
Should not be drawn, probably.
Right. No. Non-threatening gestures, stay back. Don't get excitable around them.
One person should have their eyes up. Everyone else should have their eyes down towards their feet.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay.
Question about women in this. Is it an issue having a woman up front? I'm not sure what the culture is like.
Well, just in case, I'll stay
impossible
back.
Impossible to say. You don't know what kind of society it will be. But
I know lizards. I don't know people.
Hopefully not the kind that eat women.
And not lizard people.
Very funny, Pijo.
I've heard of lizard people on these islands.
Dr. Chase, if you want to stand with Pijo, I'm sure that, you know, you with him, it'll be kind of, it's not like you're now on your own. You're with him. You're associated with him.
Yes, well, gotcha.
Remember, too, that I'm a blonde-haired, blue-eyed country boy, so I probably look as alien to them as possible.
Just in case, you know, I better keep my eyes down and just not say anything, let the guys talk here.
Well, be prepared to present a gift.
Right.
We don't know really what their currency is. I brought beads, but that was more of a Native American gesture, the colorful beads. So we're just going to have to see what they like, what they're like.
I've got cigarettes and chocolate. That's what I brought.
That's smart.
I have some dried strips of meat.
The chocolate's probably all melted by now.
I have a bag of rice.
You're right, Corey. Or, sorry, Dr. White.
Yeah. Anything that can't really stand with big humidity, we better just check and see if it's actually usable as gifts.
Yeah, good point.
Well, if we don't use colored beads, I have marbles. I know that marbles were something associated with, I think, Polynesian, like Oceania islands. I think that sailors traded marbles. I could be wrong. I could be thinking of something else. But I've got beads and marbles.
Well, probably our best bet here is
so
rice.
Different. Yeah.
Well, Wepu selects one of the bearers, an older man. He says, "This is Chime."
Nice to meet you.
I've known him a long time, and he's C H I M E. I've known him a long time. He's a good man. And I'll send him down. And he can see what's going on down there.
All right.
Okay. He'll be all right. He'll be okay. Well, there's nothing very much you can do. He sets off down to the village, and all you can really do is sit and watch him as he walks down there. And you see he moves quite hesitantly. He gets to just outside the village and stops for a moment, looks around, and then slowly walks into the village. He gets into the open area. And has anyone got any binoculars?
Yes,
sure. I do.
Well, the surveyor would probably have binoculars.
I definitely have.
And the ornithologist would.
Oh yeah, of course, yes. Mm-hmm. If you've got binoculars, you can see that he gets into the middle of the village, and he takes his machete from his belt, and he takes the small bag that he's wearing over his shoulder. And he puts them both down on the ground by his side. And he stands in the open area in the village with his hands out either side of him. And stands like that for about 30 seconds. And nothing happens. And he, still with his hands out by his sides, he starts turning round and looking around the village.
Do we see anyone?
No one at all.
Hmm.
How many huts are we talking here? A dozen, two dozen?
It's about seven or eight.
Okay.
Abandoned village, maybe?
The you can see from your binoculars, you can see Shimei picks up his machete and his bag and sort of almost backs out of the village and returns about sort of 10, 15 minutes later, makes his way back into the clearing where you are and starts talking to Weifu. And Weifu starts relaying his account to you.
Mm-hmm.
And Shimei says, there's no one there. All the buildings are clean. Everything's been swept. But there's no one there.
Mm-hmm.
It says there's bowls and there's hammocks. And some arrows and a bow and some digging sticks in the houses, but no people.
And they look recently occupied. These aren't old hammocks and old tools.
Well, Weifu's just knows if they went somewhere, they would have gone out hunting. They would have or they would have gone out looking for food or foraging. They wouldn't have. He doesn't say, that was me. He says if they went out, they'd take their digging sticks or they'd take their bows. They wouldn't. This is very odd.
Hmm.
That is really odd.
Bears some looking into.
Maybe a church social?
Like there's churches out here in the jungle, Pijo.
Well, they have their own religion. Don't be so close-minded.
Well, true, but wouldn't that be in the village?
Not necessarily. Maybe they worship a tree. I don't know.
There's some religions, I don't know exactly, they could be on a, the whole village could be on like a hunt or...
Maybe it would, sort of,
would seem odd that they would leave the village. I mean, surely there'd be old people and children that would stay in the village.
Yeah, wouldn't there? There's well, nobody there at all.
It could be hiding.
It could be an enlightenment journey, or they thought something terrible was going to happen and they left for kind of like if there would be like a fire or like evacuation.
Well, usually, no matter what, there'd always be a hunter left within the group to protect the group. So
maybe it was recently abandoned.
That's a possibility.
There wasn't any sign. Do some of these villagers attack one another?
Let's stop hypothesizing and go in and look.
Yeah, I need to take a look at this.
All right. Could they just be hiding in the bushes?
It's possible. You don't know how isolated tribes are going to react,
right?
To the presence of strangers.
Let's be careful.
Suppose it's an ambush.
Would they have cooking fires? Like, could we see if the fires are still warm?
Yeah, that would be my first shot.
There are no fires burning in the village. Shimei.
Can we see well-worn paths leading out of different locations, or directions rather?
With the binoculars, yeah, you can make out that there are a number of tracks, well-worn tracks. Some lead to what appear to be garden areas, but up here. It looks more like they, instead of the plotted gardens that you were seeing in the previous village, this is more fruits and vegetables, naturally occurring fruits and vegetables from the jungle that have been deliberately planted near the village. It also like permaculture.
Also seemed kind of unlikely that they would leave without taking their most precious items, which would be their bowls and their,
right,
their digging sticks and stuff like that.
In many cases,
but Pijo, maybe they didn't have a choice. Maybe they had to leave.
They'd still, I mean, if this is all they've got,
okay,
their whole lives,
let's stop. Let's stop conjecturing and let's get down there. We need to see this for ourselves up close before we jump to any conclusions.
Yeah, we need to get into the village and wander. Take a look around, yeah, respectfully.
You know, yeah, you know, I would follow, I would let the bearers go first, and then the men go first, and then I would follow.
Okay, is that what you're going to do then?
Mm-hmm.
I'll take up the rear, though, with the shotgun, as you know, I've been in the jungle a lot, and I'll certainly...
I'm going to kind of hang back in the rear with you.
Mm-hmm. Do that. Two sets of eyes are good.
Good point.
Okay, well, the bearers get to a point just outside the village. Kind of roughly where Shime did. 20 feet away from the entrance to the village. And they set down the boxes and the bags. And they just sort of look into the village. You get the idea that they're kind of expecting someone to come out. In the previous villages you've visited, the procedure has been that they would put their stuff down just outside the village, and then people from the village would come out and meet them. But no one comes out, and with a lot of the men don't really know what they're meant to do next, given that they've arrived at this village and no one's come out, and they don't particularly want to go in, because that would be considered quite rude. To go in en masse like that would be quite an aggressive act. Eventually, Wepu goes in, and he repeats the same actions that Shime did previously. He puts his stuff down on the ground next to him, puts his arms out by his side, waits, nothing happens. He very cautiously walks over to one of the huts, looks inside, comes back to you, and says, there's no one here.
Is there any sign of a struggle?
No, but look. And he shows you. He says, look, come here. And he takes you back over to the hut where he was, where he just looked in. He said, look. And there's a bowl with moldy food in it.
Huh. How long has this place been abandoned? It's my question.
Ask our botanist. Our botanist should know how long that would take for that mold to grow in this climate.
Yeah, I'll do a biology, see how...
Probably not very, but... I don't know anything about jungle molds.
I fail.
27 years.
Yes, somewhere between an hour and 3 years.
I... move to the center of the village.
I'm going to try to find one of the fires or where there would have been a fire and try to figure out how long it's been without like any ashes or anything being there, or like how old the ashes are.
What's Thomas doing?
Arthur, what were you?
I'm going to load around into my rifle. I'm going to point the rifle straight up, and I'm going to fire.
That's not going to help.
I turn to the group and I say...
Why would you do that?
I turn to the group and I say, because if there's people nearby, they'll come to the sound.
Everyone make a listen roll.
Woohoo!
I don't...
I'm gonna drop to the ground thinking that somebody's shooting at
me. I'm going to jump. I'm gonna try and find cover because
24.
Nah, I failed.
I passed.
Passed.
I'm dead. Definitely.
I fail.
Has anyone got a hard or an
I just hard. Barely make it.
I have a hard.
You have a hard.
Yeah, I have.
What was it? Was Listen? Where is Listen? No, it's not a heart.
I give you hack. I give Arthur hack. I'm like, why did you shoot that? You know that the bullet will be coming down and
Arthur.
Probably Brooke. Scared him off.
With a hard listen. The jungle's a very noisy place.
Mm-hmm.
And you've still got the sound of the gunshot ringing in your ears. But you're certain that for a moment you heard something almost like a squeak from one of the huts.
I point to the hut.
Huh.
And I turn to the group with this kind of glare, and I say, I'm not all books.
Obviously, you're not all books.
Well, I'll...
You know, why? Sort of. Yeah, I follow suit as well with my shotgun.
Ah. Hang on. I completely forgot about this. There we are. I have an image of the village, which has now completely disappeared. There you go. This is the village. And this is the open area where you're standing. Now, you can see that there are. This is the remains of a fire pit that is burnt out. What's odd, among other things, is the fact that there's a lot of foliage and detritus from the trees. In the village, whenever there's a strong wind, it'll blow things down from the trees. And normally, the women of the village will then sweep this area clean a couple of times a day, because it's a communal area and it's normally very well kept. That hasn't been happening.
So nobody's been here for a while, people.
Yeah, it's been abandoned for a while.
And from this hut here, is where Arthur has just heard a strange noise.
Are these huts substantial enough that someone could not bust through the back wall, or are they sturdy?
Oh, these are dwelling places. They've been constructed. You can see here from these ones here, they're constructed of heavy wooden stakes, driven into the ground. With a thatched roof over the top, and then these are bound with cordage, with vines and things. They're arranged in this courtyard structure for protection.
So the entrances are only facing the inside?
Yes.
Well, I say we take space ourselves around the entrance, and some brave individual.
I will go in, and I take my rifle, and I'm going to hand it over to Damien so that he can hold on to it. Don't lose it. It's a nice rifle.
I'm going to keep an eye on him as he does this.
I'm staying back with Damien.
Yep.
So,
I'll stay back too.
Arms outstretched in a similar fashion to Rapul and the others. I'm going to hold up my arms, and I'm going to kind of sidestep into the hut.
Okay. The hut is very dark.
Can I pull up my flashlight?
Okay.
Okay. And I'm going to light it, and I'm just going to do a little pan and scan.
Make a spot hidden, Rolf.
What is my spot hidden? It's probably not very... Oh, my God, it's a 70. All right. 58.
Mucho excellent.
Yeah. You spot all the hidden.
Muy bueno.
They're going to end up worshiping you as the god of light.
The god of all seeing.
In the corner of the room, it looks like some, you can't even tell what, bits of wood, fabric, bark cloth, possibly a sack or a bag or something, have all been piled up in the very corner of the room, almost like a little shelter within the shelter.
Hmm. Okay. I mean, I have an assumption of what this is, but I'm going to approach just one step at a time, arms outstretched, you know, making it known that there's no weapons, I'm just a big guy.
You get about 5 or 6 feet away from the little shelter, and you can very clearly hear a sort of whimper.
Okay. Ho ho! Good thing I kept this on me, because this stuff never goes bad. And Mick, you'll know it never goes bad. I reach into my pack and I remove shortbread.
Okay.
Good plan.
Unfortunately, I don't have any salt for it. So I am going to take it. I'm going to put it on my bandana. I'm going to tie the bandana up, and I guess I'm going to just kind of toss it into the shelter.
Okay, there's a little sort of bump from inside the shelter, as though something has startled back. And nothing immediately happens.
It's okay. I can wait.
Just kind of peering around the doorway, watching him do this.
Make a listen roll.
Oh, wow, I really make that. 15.
Oh, no, sorry, I meant Arthur.
Oh, okay.
I got a 25. Can I spend 5 luck points?
If you wish.
I do. I got plenty of luck to go around.
Okay.
You don't hear anything.
You can hear movement from inside the shelter.
Okay. I'm going to remain completely silent. I'm going to let them come to me, or him or her, or however many there are, to me.
I'm going to lean over to Mr. White and say, what's he doing?
Yeah.
I think he's doing an apology shit.
Well, you wait for about another 10 minutes. You think you can hear the sound of someone eating.
Mm.
You think.
Okay.
And then, just as you're resting your flashlight on your knee and absent-mindedly looking around the rest of the shelter, a small, dark shape emerges from the shelter.
Quickly or slowly? Cautiously.
Very, 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 very slowly and cautiously.
All right. So
nervously, even.
arms still outstretched. I'm gonna lean down to my pack. I'm gonna kind of use my left hand to rummage through, kind of like pushing past my Dutch oven, and everything inside, to try and reach for another shortbread. And when I feel it in my hand, I'm gonna kind of stiff arm, reach up with it in my hand, kind of outstretched.
Okay. Small hand emerges from the darkness. And as you proffer the shortbread to this small hand, you catch a glimpse in your flashlight of a small child.
Aww.
Very terrified small child reaching out to you for some more food.
Okay. I'm guessing I'm crouching down. I'm gonna make that assumption.
Okay.
I'm going to kind of take a bunch of steps back. This little bitch better not eat all my goddamn shortbread, because I only brought one box. So I really like shortbread. I'll reach down and I'll take the box out. I'm going to kind of scoot back towards, is there like a table or a little resting area? An elevated plank.
Any furniture that was in the hut has been piled up in the corner.
All right, that's fine. So I'm going to, with the shortbread still kind of in my hand, I'm going to hold a hand out like this for the kid to know, just like, don't come out yet. You don't trust me yet, so just kind of stay there. I'm going to scoot back to the door, still crouched down on my knees, and I'm going to, without taking my eyes off the child, I'm going to say, I need one of the bears to come in here now, one of them, only one, and to stand behind me.
Shimei was probably the nearest.
That's good, because he's the oldest. So slowly I'm gonna shuffle my way back. I'm gonna shuffle my way back into the room.
What'd you find in there, Dr. Morton? I can't see anything.
Hold my hand up. Don't speak. Everyone be quiet. And shuffle back in, shortbread in my hand, Shimei behind me. So that way they see, with him standing, they can see that he's, you know, he's like, him or her, is it a boy or a girl? Or is it kind of androgynous? I can't tell.
Can't really tell in that line.
All right. Regardless, he doesn't have white skin like me, so that way he can associate, like, oh, okay, there's someone else out there that I can relate to. I approach shortbread in my hand, and I'm going to take the shortbread, I'm going to put it in Shimei's hand.
Okay.
And I'm going to sidestep so that he can now approach.
All right. He sort of cranes his head to look in the shelter, because he obviously doesn't know what's in there.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's a bit of a bit of a pause, and once more the child emerges very cautiously, from its shelter, and Shimei hands her the food, and she starts eating again. And okay. He says something to her. You don't understand what he says.
Yeah.
And she looks up at him, but she doesn't say anything.
Mm-hmm. And he won't understand anything I say to him, so.
No.
There's no point in trying to give him instruction. Actually, well, I mean, I can try. I kind of tap Shimei on the shoulder, and I make hand gestures, like body language. Essentially saying, her bring outside. Can't we can't keep her in here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would you roll for that?
I want to say language own.
Persuade?
Persuade? I don't know. Because it's body language.
It's
so
not
I don't
persuading.
Know.
Maybe dex?
Oh, boy. If you roll a 99, he's going to chop a little kid's head off just like you told him.
What about psychology? No,
good point.
What about intelligence?
That
yeah,
sounds
okay.
Reasonable.
Yeah.
Sounds reasonable to me.
All right, I can do an intelligence.
Raw intelligence and problem solving. Yes.
All right. So 25. So that's beyond a heart.
Okay.
So
he seems to understand you.
Okay. So I'm going to. So is he crouching down as well, or is he standing?
He's crouching down.
Okay.
And
so
he's talking to the child.
Okay. I do not want to be above his level, so I'm going to remain crouching.
Okay.
Anthropology stuff is fun.
No, I kind of see vaguely that they're in there huddled around something. I still can't really tell what they're huddled around, but it seems pretty clear that we need to back away from the door, so I start backing away from the door.
What the hell's going on in there?
I think they found somebody.
I've got to find the stats for that character, that NPC. Oh, where is he? Ah, there we are. Okay. Persuasion. Oh, he's a very persuasive fellow. Okay. You can't, I mean, she doesn't seem to be responding to anything he says. But nonetheless, after he's offered her the food and talks to her for a little while, she starts sort of moving a little closer towards him and a little closer towards him. And then after some time, I mean, it's a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes of this.
Mm-hmm.
She gives him her hand and very slowly, step by step, the two of them walk to the door, and she gets quite nervous as she gets to the door. She can see that there are people outside, and she gets a little worried and almost pulls back. But he says something to her, which seems to reassure her. And they emerge together with her. She's almost unable to keep her eyes open. She's blinking in the daylight. Her eyes aren't used to the light.
Now,
I see this child, and I immediately feel for her.
What's like her condition look like?
Yeah, is she sick or is she like emaciated or anything?
She's very dirty. You could tell. Arthur could tell when watching her eating the shortbread that she was clearly very hungry. She doesn't look emaciated. But she was clearly very, very hungry.
How old does she look? About five?
About four or five, yeah.
Oh my God, she's tiny.
How the hell does she survive? Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's weird.
This has to have happened really, really recently.
Well, ask Wepu if he can communicate with her at all, or if she can speak.
I assume I'm now standing with Chime, but I kind of make the hand gestures because to kind of continue backing up because she hasn't fully seen what we look like. She was in the dark when she looked at me, and now she's going to see us in broad daylight. She's just going to see white people standing around her.
Mm-hmm.
So
I get the hint from when Dr. Morton was kneeling down in the hut. Maybe I should get down on her level. That might make me seem less threatening.
Okay.
So I do that.
So I'm going to look at Lepu, and I'm going to kind of wave him over.
Okay, he comes over to you.
And I'm going to say to him, let's try and figure out what happened. But the second something is wrong, we need to pull back. We need to stop. It looks like we're camping here tonight as well. We can't just leave this little girl out on her own.
No.
Or he tells the men. The men, they look a bit apprehensive about the idea of staying here, but the fact that the child seems to have sort of persuaded them somewhat.
If a child can survive, then we can all survive.
Mm-hmm.
Child doesn't have guns, we have guns.
They set about making camp, although in a very different way to the previous nights. I mean, this is a traditional mm-hmm. local village. They know how to this isn't like camping. This is like walking into a house. This is like they know what to do instinctively. They mm-hmm. get things going. They get the fires going.
Okay.
And they start cooking. Don't need to put up tents or anything like that. It's not necessary. Wepu is having a conversation with Shimei, and there's a bit of to and fro between the two of them, and then Wepu comes back over to you and says, "He said that she won't say anything. She's very scared.
Probably traumatized."
And he said, Shimei said that he's from her face, he can tell that she understands him. You know, that's the only language that people in this area could possibly talk.
Mm.
We're too close to the valley for anyone to speak any languages that he doesn't know. He knows the people of this region. He has relatives. His relatives live further down the valley, but they speak a language very similar to this language here.
Mm-hmm.
These are the same people. But she's not talking. He said he sees it in her eyes that she understands him, but she doesn't say anything.
Hmm.
Well, I imagine she'll talk when she's ready to talk.
Yeah. I think before she says anything, before she'll say anything, she needs to know we're trustworthy.
Yeah.
Something happened here.
Something traumatized this child.
Well, something's happened to these villages because nobody's going to leave a child behind them.
What if the village fled because of the child?
What? Well, I'm
superstition.
Sorry.
Superstition and all? Maybe the village left the child here on purpose.
Well,
maybe. I actually, Miss Jack, I am starting to believe that I think that might be the case.
I'm not so sure. It would be more than likely, wouldn't they take the child out into the woods and leave him there rather than abandon the village?
Yeah, and she wouldn't have been cowering like Arthur mentioned if she was just left here.
Maybe she wants you to get close to her.
I bet you that anything, something happened to the village.
I agree. Up.
Do any of you have psychology?
I have psychology.
I have psychology.
If any of you would like to try a psychology roll?
I have psychology of lizards.
Nope.
Is she acting lizard-like?
She's really upset because her tail fell off.
It'll grow back. You know how that
child
works.
It just...
Yeah, I got a 33.
Is that a pass?
Yep. More than half.
She, as best you can tell, I mean, she's in a state of great shock. She's nonverbal. Just by her general demeanor, with your grasp of psychology, in your opinion, she's genuinely terrified of something. She's been through some kind of ordeal.
Well, maybe we can get her to draw or something if she won't talk.
Well, even without psychology, you can tell that if, let's say, a rival tribe came here to attack and Mama said, hide under that table, and then they lost... She was left here under the table, and the last thing she knows, she got out from under the table, and there's nobody here.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be traumatized, too.
True. Well, maybe she might react better to a female. I mean, pretty much everyone here except for me is a dude. So maybe if I try doing what Arthur was doing and offer her some food, maybe she will relate to me more.
Just be sweet to her. Maybe she'll...
Or show her the photo of the rope hand.
Yeah.
Oh, don't traumatize her further.
I'm exploring and investigating. It's what scientists do.
You're as cold-blooded as the animals you study.
You can do that. I am going to give her some dried meat.
Yes, I think that the people who want to show her horrifying photos and the people who believe that she's the reason the people left should stand in one corner and everyone else should stand with her and help her out.
Experimentation. I'm just offering a suggestion.
It's only a plan. Not a good plan, but it's a plan.
It's a feasible plan.
However, Damien is right. We do kind of need to figure out what happened here. And
right, true.
And she's the only one that's going to be able to tell us. And we probably shouldn't leave this area until we know what happened. Because if it's a roving band of raiders or something like that, raiders, then they could be in the forest and we're done. We're out of here.
Well, show her a series of photos, of pictures. Like, draw a picture of, like, a man with a spear, and then draw a butterfly, a bird,
mm-hmm.
and then a rope hand.
Well,
see if she screams at any of those.
Cold-blooded, like a giant alligator.
I'm a herpetologist.
Well, no. That's not a bad idea.
Well,
it
does she?
It isn't
a bad idea. Does she react any differently to me kneeling down and giving her food? Like, does she seem more receptive at all?
Flap your arms.
Sorry.
She takes the food again hesitantly. She doesn't seem any more comfortable with you than with anyone else so far.
Okay. Too different from her.
Concerning your other plan, Arthur, what do these people even use pictograms? Will they even understand writing? Or
I don't think they'll understand writing.
I think everybody understands pictures, Pijo.
That's why you're the archaeologist and he's the anthropologist.
I don't think they have a spoken language, and I believe that they have a written language, but we don't know what their written language could be, and even Wepu may not know it because it could be a variant of a currently existing written language. Mm-hmm. So maybe drawing pictures in the dirt, things that she can associate.
That's what I was about to suggest.
Yeah, we could easily do drawn pictures in the ground, that of a person, that of a bird or a ropin, like Damien suggests. And then if those things don't correlate, then maybe she can draw something.
Okay, good point.
You know, so that way. I understand that we can get her to talk about these things, but she may not be open, comfortable. She may not be open and comfortable to speaking about it. It may help.
She might not do it verbally.
Yeah, she may. It may help her feel more comfortable with us if she drew it out, if she understood that this is kind of like a game.
Well,
right.
You guys know what you're doing, so.
Well, we should talk about this amongst ourselves. Whoever is going to do this needs to be pretty much the most charismatic out of all of us. It's got to be someone who she feels like she's playing a game with.
Mm-hmm. Well, that might be Chime.
It's true. Right.
Or Wepu.
It's true. One of the two of them.
She's going to connect with them more.
Okay. So we tell them what to draw, they draw it, and then we watch reactions and we see what she says or what she draws.
Okay. Does anybody else hear that jungle barker?
There's a monster in those woods.
Probably some sort of like jungle dog or something. Wild dingo. Jungle dog.
New Guinea singing dog.
It's a dingo looking for a baby.
Well, I mean, we have one right here, so.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, let's enact that plan to see if we can get drawing going on and we can communicate that way.
Okay. What are you going to draw?
I'm going to draw a person with a spear. It's a little stick figure with a little spear.
Okay, she looks at it and looks at you blankly.
Okay, I look at Chime and I say, "Can you see if this is what happened to her village? If this is the bad thing that happened?" She just needs to shake her head or nod her head.
P.U.P. says something to her and she doesn't reply.
I'm going to take that as a no. Like Damien said, mm-hmm. she's going to have a reaction to the thing that did this. There's going to be a reaction. So this
right,
is not
right.
So I'm going to scratch it out, and I'm going to begin drawing a pterosaur from a bird's eye view. So wings, wing to wing, and then kind of a pointed angular for the beak, and then a tail.
You're skipping right over butterfly.
We're skipping right over butterfly. We're going right to the
source. Oh yes, those giant killer butterflies. They wipe out many, many villages in Papua New Guinea.
You never know, frogs.
I say aside to Jack quite quietly, I say, you know, I wonder if they figured that if they show this little girl the boogeyman in a picture, that she's not going to have a reaction just because it's the freaking boogeyman.
Well,
I don't think I can draw the boogeyman in the dirt.
I mean, the boogeyman in this case is the ropin.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what he already drew.
She carries on just looking at it blankly.
So it's not the ropin.
Let me see the picture and see if I can draw it from the picture. So I kind of look at the picture and I'm like, he did say that bulbous thing on the end was apparently its head. So maybe if I draw kind of like a pterodactyl thing, but with like a long neck and like clawed feet and like this weird like like bulbous thing on the end?
Does Don't she we react have to a that? Photo? We could just show her the photo.
Good point.
Yeah, the photo.
Okay, just show her the photo then.
Yeah, she's just almost looking through it.
Oh, there we go.
She's in shock.
Mm-hmm.
It's Gila monsters.
It's dingoes.
You have to go all the way to New Mexico to find those Gila monsters.
That's true. You don't want to mess with a Gila monster, boys.
All right, but she doesn't react to the photo at all?
Nope.
I think you're just going to have to wait until she talks on her own.
All
right. A few days, probably. Yeah. Make her feel secure.
Right. Make it seem like we're just a normal, everyday group of villagers doing our normal, everyday village thing. And she hopefully will open up.
So what are you going to do now?
I'll give Dr. Morgan chocolate to pass on to her.
How late in the day is it?
It's about 4:15 now.
All right.
Might as well sleep here.
I mean, we can't just leave her here. And she's probably not going to leave the village.
Yeah, we're going to stay here.
Yeah, I'm with Dr. White.
I'm tired.
But does somebody want to, like, keep a watch out?
Good idea.
Oh, for sure.
All right. Well, I'll take first watch.
All right. I'll follow suit after you then, I guess.
I'll take third.
Okay.
And I'll take the last shift.
Well, the night passes really quite uneventfully. Sleeping in the village is certainly easier than you found it sleeping out in the bush.
Mm-hmm.
No one seems other than the child. No one seems particularly anxious. The men aren't really that bothered by being in this deserted village. I mean, all the men seem to have their own ideas as to where everyone's gone. Like they've gone to a funeral or they've gone hunting, even though the bows are still there. One or two of them think that everyone went out to look for the kid. And the kid came back while they were out.
Good point.
That's funny.
Yeah,
of course, it looks like they've been gone for a month.
A lot of this gets shared over breakfast. You're having your breakfast. And really just sort of trying to wake up. It's very mm-hmm. difficult to rouse yourself in this heat.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on a minute. 1, 2, 3, 4. Dr. Ardu there is a tugging sensation just above your knee, and you turn to see the small child pulling at your trouser leg, and she points at the ground.
I'll look down on the ground.
On the ground, down in the dirt, she has drawn something. She has drawn this.
A butterfly.
Something like a large insect?
It's a goddamn butterfly.
Oh, that's not a butterfly.
No, I don't think so.
You had to skip the butterfly, didn't you?
There you are. Dr. Martin.
Does that thing have 10 legs?
It's a child's drawing, though. I wouldn't.
It's a bug. It's probably a butterfly.
It has an antenna. It's an insect.
Yeah. Some sort of bug.
Just a bug.
One set of wings, a lot of legs. It's Mothra. Whoops.
It's Mothra.
She probably thought it was a. She probably. Rodan, where's he? We're finding a Ropin, so where's Rodan?
This Rodan is Mothra.
The Ropin is Rodan.
Yeah. We're going to see Rodan and Mothra fight. I kind of looked at the group and I say, she probably thinks that the drawings on the ground were some kind of game that we were playing with her, and so she drew a butterfly. She just drew an insect.
Well, have Chime ask if that's what did this to the village.
All right. So I'll ask Rapu to translate over to the child to ask if... is this butterfly is what killed the whole group, the whole village.
She points at the picture that she's drawn in the dirt, and then she points off up the mountain.
Oh, okay.
And that's where we'll leave it for tonight.
Our players included Jen Coulter, Corey Heisted, Sean Little, Thomas McKeon, Jeff Wilkins, and myself, with Big Swan as the Keeper of the Secrets. Please consider visiting our Patreon site. If each of you contributed just $2 or $3 a month, we would be able to cover our expenses without any problem. We're currently producing 4 shows a week, with music and sound effects added in post-production in order to create a richer listener experience. We provide audio-only versions of our shows free for you to download from Podbean or iTunes. Our musical intro, Birch Run Primal Drive, was composed by our good friend Kevin McLeod and is used royalty-free under a Creative Commons attribution license. Feel free to send us comments on the show. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed our broadcast, please give us a thumbs up and subscribe to our channel for updates on the latest shows. You'll find links to everything I mentioned in the description below. This is Tom Raley, together with all the members of our gaming group, inviting you to journey with us once again into the darkness for another adventure into the universe of H.P. Lovecraft and the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. Until next time, good luck and good gaming.